because gays and lesbians are one of the groups most targeted for hate crimes, to leave us out of the list of protected groups says that there's something about us that's not worthy of protection.
He said, you get your butt down to the Board of Elections and you register to vote right now and register as a Democrat. We're going to run you for delegate to the Democratic Convention.
You can take your tolerance and stow it. We're gonna be ourselves and show it.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Canada outlaws homophobic hate speech, a British judge weighs employment and religious rights, and a pioneering activist and singer shares some of her high points and high notes. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending May 1st, 2004. Canada's criminal code will soon protect gays and lesbians from hate propaganda. The federal Senate approved the move by an almost 6-to-1 margin this week, leaving only the formality of royal assent for enactment. 56% of the House of Commons had voted for it in September, but organized opposition had significantly stalled the Senate vote. Canadian law already recognized physical attacks motivated by homophobia as hate crimes. The passage of C-250 is quite remarkable, since it's a private member's bill from a small opposition party. That rare victory belongs to openly gay New Democratic Party Member of Parliament Sven Robinson, who's been working for the change for many years. Ironically, it comes when he's on medical leave and, at least for now, out of politics after admitting to shoplifting a valuable ring. The incitement to hatred statute already criminalizes verbal attacks based on color, ethnicity, race, and religion. Some religious conservatives claimed that the addition of sexual orientation could make sermons subject to criminal charges, and even that the Bible could be declared hate literature. But the law does allow for religion-based arguments made in good faith, and prosecution requires prior approval by the Attorney General.
The religious exemption in Britain's law against employment discrimination based on sexual orientation won a limited legal victory this week. The challenge was brought by 7 trade unions, which claimed the exemption for faith-based organizations is flawed and incompatible with European law. London High Court Justice David Richards upheld the exemption in general, but did impose one significant limitation. He found that teachers in religious schools are likely to have full protection from sexual orientation discrimination. The judge gave the unions leave to take the case on to the Court of Appeal. Britain's Employment Equality Sexual Orientation Act only went into effect in December as part of the Labour government's move to comply with a European Union directive.
Last week, the European Parliament adopted a human rights resolution that reaffirmed its support for equal treatment of gays and lesbians. However, just 3 weeks earlier, the EP rejected a report on civil rights in the EU that called for recognition of all unmarried couples across borders and full marriage and adoption rights for gay and lesbian couples.
French law will not recognize same-gender marriages, the justice minister announced this week. The question was sparked by Green MP Noel Mamère's plan to marry a gay couple in June in his capacity as mayor of a Bordeaux area town. But while Mamère claimed to have found no law explicitly prohibiting that action, Justice Minister Dominique Perben flatly called that a lie. Perben, of the ruling center-right UMP, cited a line from the civil code that the parties to a marriage declare that they want to take each other as husband and wife. He said prosecutors will take action to block the marriage in advance or to annul it afterwards. Mamère had already said the marriage could serve as a test case in the European Court of Human Rights, but Perben says the treaty that court is designed to uphold, the European Convention on Human Rights, defines marriage as between a man and a woman. Since 2000, France has allowed same-gender couples to gain many of the benefits of marriage through pacts of civil solidarity.
Germany's 2-year-old legal registered partnerships for same-gender couples gained new power this week with a ruling by the Federal Labor Court. The court found that those so-called life partnerships, eingetragene Lebensgemeinschaften, confer family status and that civil servants must be granted full spousal benefits for their registered partners. The case before the court was brought by a nurse who had been denied the full location allowance his married colleagues received.
Ireland's influential Law Reform Commission this week issued a new report recommending legal recognition of unmarried domestic partners, including gay and lesbian couples. The commission believes there should be a mechanism for those couples to obtain a number of rights which come automatically with marriage in areas including health care, pensions, social welfare, and taxation. For those couples who have cohabited for at least 3 years, or two if a child is involved, there should also be recognition with respect to inheritance and property, and for support should the couple break up. The commission noted that the number of cohabiting couples in Ireland had more than doubled from 1996 to 2002 to become about 8.5% of the population, although identified gay and lesbian couples are only a small fraction of that group.
Maine will become the fifth U.S. state to register domestic partners beginning in 3 months. This week, 56% of the state Senate voted for final approval of a bill 59% of the House had already supported 2 weeks earlier, and Governor John Baldacci promptly signed it into law. The Maine registry will allow cohabitants of at least 12 months standing, regardless of gender, to gain next of kin status, spousal inheritance rights in the absence of a will, and priority for serving as guardians or conservators for incapacitated partners.
Domestic partner benefits will actually be on the way out among some larger employers in Massachusetts as that state gears up to offer the United States' first legal marriages to gays and lesbians in mid-May. The state has neither a partnership registry of its own nor any legal requirement that employers extend spousal benefits to unmarried workers' cohabitants, but a number of companies there have offered the benefits to remain competitive. Now, though, some explain that the benefits were offered to gay and lesbian employees because they couldn't marry, and if those workers want to keep receiving the benefits, they'll have to marry fairly promptly once they can. Massachusetts Republican Governor Mitt Romney has vigorously opposed the marriages ordered by the state's highest court. Now he has written to the governors and attorneys general of all the other U.S. states saying Massachusetts will marry non-resident same-gender couples only if their home state promises to recognize the marriage. He told the New York Times that Massachusetts should not become the Las Vegas of same-sex marriage. We do not intend to export our marriage confusion to the entire nation.
This week in neighboring New Hampshire, the House of Representatives approved a bill to explicitly deny recognition to same-gender marriages performed outside the state. The New Hampshire State Senate had previously approved it, but it may not be easy for the chambers to compromise on a single measure. The two versions differ with respect to other kinds of legal partnerships.
Australian Prime Minister John Howard is considering legislation to deny legal recognition to same-gender marriages. Proposed amendments to the Marriage Act would both reject same-gender marriages performed in another country and block Australian courts from legalizing them. Howard said, "The proposal would be to simply insert a definition in the Marriage Act which gives formal expression to what most people regard to be the case, and that is marriage as we understand it in Australia is between a man and a woman. This is not directed at gay people. It's directed at reaffirming a bedrock understanding of our society. There are certain institutions that we understand to have a certain meaning, and why not say so?" The gay support of Australian Democrats and Greens were quick to criticize the idea, including accusing the Liberal Party-led ruling coalition of playing U.S.-style wedge-issue politics for upcoming elections.
The world lost one of its most distinguished poets this week with the passing of Tom Gunn at the age of 74. Born and educated in England, Gunn moved to San Francisco in the 1950s to study. He remained there, serving on the UC Berkeley faculty until retiring 4 years ago. His more than 30 published books won him numerous honors in both the U.S. and the U.K., including major poetry prizes and both Guggenheim and MacArthur fellowships. He's survived by his partner of 52 years, Mike Cate.
And finally, while France is debating same-gender marriage, primetime TV there has begun showing an ad featuring a gay male couple for the first time. Reportedly, the only prior inclusive TV ad there showed one gay couple for 1 second in a collage with 19 heterosexual pairs. The latest entry comes from Procter & Gamble, which hasn't been quite so daring with its ads backwards based in the U.S. The product is the laundry detergent Vizier, considered by two 30-something men comparing their white shirts. "You like the strength and the mildness, don't you?" asks one to the other's agreement. There's some debate among experts as to whether the ad pitches to the mainstream or the gay audience. The dialogue includes certain innocent-sounding phrases which carry more sexual meanings in French gay slang. But it definitely has a happy ending, as one man tells the other, "This shirt looks good on you," and caresses him.
That's News Wrap for the week ending May 1st, 2004. Written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Rick Watts.
A Stonewall-inspired musician activist regales us with tales of her many firsts. But first...
The death is the silence. In this language of violence, death is the silence. But death is the silence. In the cycle of violence.
Inciting hatred against lesbians and gays is now illegal in Canada, thanks to the passage of a bill adding sexual orientation to the country's hate propaganda law. The bill's success represents over a decade of effort by openly gay New Democratic Party MP Sven Robinson, whose sudden medical leave ironically prevented his presence from the victory. This Way Out correspondent Heather Kitching examines the new law.
Dallas area ought to make some signs, and those signs ought to say, "To gay rights, AIDS, and hell."
Westboro Baptist Church minister Fred Phelps is probably the most famous flat-out hater of queers in all of North America. Infamous for his God Hates Fags website, his picketing of the funeral of Matthew Shepard, and his demonstrations against institutions of all kinds that he perceives as remotely gay-positive. Nobody figures they can really do anything to stop Fred Phelps, but in Canada, a new law may help silence people like him. On April 29th, a bill became law that adds sexual orientation to the list of grounds protected by Canada's hate propaganda law.
Hate propaganda law?
Stephen Locke is a director of Canada's queer rights lobby group, AGAL.
It's kind of broken down into two parts. One is advocating genocide, which we all know is bad. And then it goes into Section 319, which talks about public incitement of hatred. The definition there is everyone who, by communicating statements in any public place, incites hatred against any identifiable group where such incitement is likely to lead to a breach of the peace, is guilty of an indictable offense. Identifiable group was originally any section of the public distinguished by color, race, religion, or ethnic origin, and now sexual orientation.
Locke points out that Canada's hate propaganda law is not to be mistaken with its hate crime sentencing law, which has included sexual orientation since 1995.
Hate crime is something different. If someone attacks me and beats me up, and it can be shown that the motivating factor there was because I was homosexual, that's a hate crime. That's quite different from what this section of criminal code deals with. This deals with propaganda. A blatant example is Fred Phelps from Westboro Baptist Church down in Kansas. He's not the best example because it is American-based, so we can't really be saying, well, he's going against our laws. But what we can do is keep him out of Canada now, where if he comes into Canada and starts spreading his bile, we now have steps the RCMP can take to deal with that. We couldn't before. Similar sort of sites or writings or broadcasts or whatever in Canada now come under Section 319.
Bill C-250 overcame exceptional odds in order to become law. The bill was sponsored by openly gay NDP member of Parliament Sven Robinson, and ordinarily, bills that are not sponsored by the governing party almost never succeed. But Robinson had the support of the Vancouver Police Department, who in turn rallied support from the Canadian Association of Police Boards and the Canadian Association of Police Chiefs. Retired police inspector Dave Jones from the Vancouver Police Department testified before both the House and Senate committees who reviewed the bill. He told them the police studied their hate crime statistics following the 2001 gay-bashing murder of Aaron Webster, which galvanized Vancouver's gay community. What they discovered was that anti-gay hate activity accounted for 38% of all hate crimes reported to the Vancouver police, yet queers were the only group reporting hate crimes who were not protected by the hate propaganda law. The committee also heard testimony, however, from opponents of the bill, including religious groups who said that it would stifle free speech and shut down religious criticism of homosexuality. But Stephen Locke says the bill does nothing of the sort.
A person can't be convicted under that subsection if it's established the statements communicated were true, if in good faith he or she expressed or attempted to establish by argument an opinion on a religious subject. So it does allow for an interpretation of sacred text. If the statements were relevant to any subject of public interest, the discussion of which was for the public benefit, and if on reasonable grounds he or she believed them to be true, and then finally, if in good faith the individual intended to point out for the purpose of removal matters producing or tending to produce feelings of hatred towards an identifiable group in Canada, so that allows for academic and human rights discussions, I would assume. So this whole argument that it's an infringement on freedom of speech and an infringement of freedom of religion is absolutely bogus.
For the reasons Stephen Locke describes, it's highly unlikely that Canada's hate propaganda law will ever result in many, if any, prosecutions for anti-gay hate speech. But as a GALS advocacy director, Laurie Aaron, points out, the biggest victory is really symbolic.
Because gays and lesbians are one of the groups most targeted for hate crimes, to leave us out of the list of protected groups, it says that there's something about us that's not worthy of protection. And so that message is now changed from we're not worthy of protection to we are worthy of protection.
For This Way Out, I'm Heather Kitching in Vancouver.
Sing if you're happy that way. Hey, sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy this way.
Hi, this is Tom Robinson reminding you that you're either listening to, discovering for the first time, or tuned right in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine with Lucia Chappelle and Greg Gordon.
With a varied list of accomplishments as long as a lesbian's arm, activist, author, educator, musician, and archivist Madeline Davis was one of the first leaders of the Buffalo, New York chapter of the Mattachine Society, and in 1972 was one of the first elected openly queer delegates to the Democratic National Convention. She shares some of her political and musical adventures with queer music heritage producer and This Way Out correspondent J.D. Doyle.
While she walks in boots of leather and slippers made of gold, she will be a child forever. Forever she'll be old. She's the heroine of legends. She's the eagle and the dove. She's the daughter of the moon. She's my sister and my love.
That song was called Boots of Leather, Slippers of Gold, and was recorded by Madeline Davis in 1983. It was also the title of an award-winning book she co-authored. This is J.D. Doyle, and in this U.S. election year, I want to take a look back at one of our culture's historic figures. In 1972, the first two openly gay and lesbian delegates were sent to the Democratic National Convention. Besides Jim Foster of San Francisco, Madeline Davis of Buffalo, New York, was there to help select George McGovern as the candidate, and they both gave a televised address before the convention. I asked Madeline how all that came about.
In December of 1969, Frank Kameny from Washington Mattachine came to Buffalo at the behest of a bar owner who was being harassed by the police. And Frank came in and talked about the Washington efforts and the New York City efforts to fight back. And, of course, he told us all about Stonewall. And by January of 70, a Mattachine Society formed. From then on, I was involved in gay politics. And I really had been quite apolitical. In 1972, in the early spring of 72, the head of our political action committee called me and said, "I assume you are a registered Democrat, is that correct?" I said, "No, I'm not a registered anything. I've never voted." He said, "You've never voted?
you get your butt down to the Board of Elections and you register to vote right now and register as a Democrat. We're going to run you for delegate to the Democratic Convention. I said, okay. And I politely went down and registered as a Democrat. And then he had to go before the committee that was choosing people as delegates to run for McGovern. And they asked me why I wanted to be a McGovern delegate. And I said, I'm a lesbian, and I think that gays and lesbians have not had their say and have not been heard by any of the political parties, and it's about time that, you know, that we started fighting back and fighting back in a very public arena. And they picked me. It was very exciting, and so I went down to be a McGovern delegate, and along with Jim Foster, who was a delegate from San Francisco, and we gave the first speeches in favor of a gay rights plank in the Democratic platform.
Tell me about Lesbianism 101.
Oh, that was the first course on lesbianism ever taught at a major university in the country. I put the class together with a woman named Margaret Small. We taught it together, and it was great.
What was the focus of the course?
Oh, learning about lesbian culture and how to find it in the middle of straight culture. And also learning about the politics of lesbian feminism at that time and where it fit into the women's movement, because at that time it was the lavender herring. You know, people were really scared that the public would see the women's movement as just a bunch of dykes, much of which was actually true.
Well, besides being the first openly lesbian delegate to a national presidential convention, formulating and teaching the first course on lesbianism at a major university, Madeline has another accomplishment. She co-authored a book called Boots of Leather, Slippers of Gold, The History of the Lesbian Community in Buffalo from 1935 to 1965. It was the first history of a gay working class community and won a Lambda Literary Award for Lesbian Studies in 1994. But I want to finish up this interview by asking about still another of her firsts. She recorded the very first gay liberation song in 1971. Tell us about the song Stonewall Nation.
Okay. I went to the first march I ever attended in 1971. It was a march on the state capitol in Albany. I wound up, almost by default, being a speaker at that march. I had not planned on it, but they were looking for an upstate woman to talk. They had a downstate and upstate man. They had a downstate woman, and they were looking for an upstate woman. They're rushing through the crowds, yelling, "We need an upstate woman! We need an upstate woman!" And we started to march. That was all the, you know, warning I had. Well, we were at the head of this line of just hundreds of people, and I'd never been in a march before, and it was scary, and it was wonderful at the same time. We mounted the steps of the Capitol, and we all spoke. And I was so high from that experience that on the way home, I wrote in my notebook the words to Stonewall Nation. That was produced at the end of 71 by the Mattachine Society. I think we produced 545 RPM records.
How did it get recorded?
I sang it at a few concerts, and some of the guys were there, and they said, you know, this ought to be a record. This is kind of a gay anthem. Somebody should record this. I said, well, I don't have any money. You want to record it? And they said, sure, let's do this. We have enough money in the treasury. Let's do it. So we did it.
This is J.D. Doyle for This Way Out, and here's Stonewall Nation by Madeline Davis.
I don't want to see my brothers kicked into the dust no more. Their dreams all turn to rust no more, no more, no more. I don't want to see my sisters having to give in no more. Their love and cold are sin no more, no more, no more.
just to wait and see. March along, we're all gonna sing our song right now, right now. Sisters, take me by the hand, we're gonna build our promised land right now, right.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Rick Watts, Graham Underhill, Fensbury, Rex Walkner, Heather Kitching, and J.D. Doyle contributed program material. From 1971, Stonewall Nation was written and performed by Madeline Davis, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on planetout.com. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by grants from Clarissa Pinkola Estes, La Sociedad de Guadalupe Foundation, and the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. You too can help keep this program on the air and get some queer audio history, music, and culture CDs in return. For all the details, please do log on to thiswayout.org or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on Aero FM, Masterton, New Zealand, WDFH, Ossining, New York, KBOO, Portland, Oregon, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Please do stay tuned.